Hookup is here to help. Get in touch with The Hookup via Facebook and The Hookup page on the Triple J website.
You're on The Hookup with Hannah Riley on Triple J. We've been talking about workplace relationships up until this point, but we're going to do a bit of a gear change. We're talking about pleasure, and we're going to get an absolute schooling because we're joined by Cindy Darnell. She's a sex and relationships therapist and educator. You might have seen her in ABC TV's Lukewarm Sex with Luke McGregor and her instructional video series, The Atlas of Erotic Anatomy and Arousal. Whew, say that fast 10 times. Cindy, so good to have you with us.
Oh, it's great to be here. Happy Sunday night.
Now, let's take a trip downstairs. In your video series, you take a close look at the vagina, the penis, the anus, you know, all the good stuff.
Yeah.
Let's start with the vagina. You've actually brought in a puppet that you may have seen on Lukewarm Sex as well. Could you just quickly describe it for us?
Okay. So in the Atlas, we do talk about the vagina, but it's important to remember that vagina is only one part of the broader anatomy, which is actually the vulva, which encompasses the lips and the clitoris and the urethra and the G-spot and all the yummy stuff. That's all the vulva. So the vulva is a vulva puppet, and it's made out of velvet and satin. And it's actually one of my most popular teaching tools because it really helps demystify a part of the body that even for people who own a bit of the body that looks like this is often very mysterious, because for a lot of us who have this kind of anatomy, we don't get to see it because it's all tucked away.
Yeah, that's very difficult to see.
You've got to get a mirror to have a look at it.
You've got to be incredibly flexible.
Absolutely. And then if you don't have one, they can also be a bit mysterious. So part of having a larger-than-life velvet and satin puppet version means that people can really see stuff clearly, like on the big screen, as it were. Mm. And it also, it sort of takes the sting and the shame out of it, because it's kind of a bit like watching the Muppets, but sexy.
It is. It's very non-threatening.
Very non-threatening. And that's exactly the point. And so that's why I think teaching sex education to adults, which is what I do, through a filter of fun and buoyancy, is more helpful than a lot of the stuff that we might have got at school, which is a bit more fear-based, a bit more kind of disease-based, a bit more pregnancy-based. And that stuff's important. I'm not saying it's not important, but they're not necessarily the reasons that people hook up, you know? There's a lot of reasons that people hook up, and I think we need to teach sex through the filter of the reasons why people do it, which is, you know, mostly having a good time, pleasure, connection, all that yummy stuff.
Well, let's get right into that teaching with some texts that we've received. Mm-hmm. Matt from St. Kilda asks, what's the correct way to rub / touch the clitoris? Porn simply shows rubbing in circles, but I've also heard people saying that that's incorrect and painful. Any tips or info?
Okay. First thing to do is ask the person who owns the clitoris. Always. Best rule of thumb. Yes. Ask the owner of the clitoris. Because some are more sensitive than others, some are bigger than others. In the same way that not all penises like being touched and stroked the same way, not even on the same person in the same way necessarily. Some days are more sensitive than others. The same applies to clitorises. So always the rule of thumb is, how do you like it? And starting with questions that are, you know, what we call the WH questions. So how, when, you know, where, that kind of stuff is more helpful than is this good? Because is this good really only gives us one answer, well, two answers, yes or no. Mm. And if it is good, we don't know exactly which bit is good. So it's helpful to have a bit of a dialogue. Now, I know some people feel a bit awkward about that. They don't want to be talking about it too much. So if that is the case, if folks are just really, really uncomfortable talking about it, what can be helpful then is to start slow and try engage responses from how they're moving, how she's breathing, what sort of sounds she's making, noticing if there's lubrication present, noticing just actually, you know, paring your awareness down to more subtle things. If communication, verbal communication is not appropriate, or you don't or you can't, or for whatever reason it's not happening, all you've got left is your gut responses and your vision and, you know, your hopefully your respect. So it's really, really important to be able to check in with that kind of stuff. Now, if you're wanting really sort of practical things, circles are actually great. And the reason that circles are great is because if you're using the flat of your hand as opposed to just one finger, using the flat of your hand means you're going to get a broader, wider surface area, and it's less likely that you're going to fall off the target. So if you're really not sure, starting with a flat hand or even three fingers together in like a, you know, like a salute kind of gesture.
Like a scout salute.
Yeah, they didn't teach you that at scouts, did they? They should have.
Hopefully not.
So something like that can be helpful. And using lubricant. Always use lubricant. Always, always, always use lubricant. And starting slow and then building up. If you notice that she's starting to press herself into you, if you notice that she's sort of, you know, grinding and humping and moving and giving you the impression that it's happening, you can maybe build up the speed. Ideally, it's best to talk about it, but if that's not possible, then go with her, let her lead it by letting her press into your hand rather than you pressing into her, if that makes sense. Because then that way she's going to be able to control the pressure and the speed more than you.
You're listening to The Hookup on Triple J with Hannah Riley. Should probably say we are going to be talking quite graphically about the nitty-gritty of sex. So, you know, adult content warning for definitely the rest of this hour. Now, speaking about the clitoris, a lot of people think it's just the, you know, external. And Anonymous actually asks on the text line 0439 75 7555, which is where you can ask any questions about pleasure for the rest of the show. Is the clitoris real? Where is it? I'm not joking. And I'm sure many, many people have the same question.
Oh, that's a great question. Yes, the clitoris is real. It's not Santa Claus. It's an actual thing. It is in many, many ways, it's effectively the same tissue as a penis. So, and in fact, when all of us are in utero, so when we're in our mummy's tummy still, we all have clitorises to start with, or something that resemble clitorises. And so penises actually form out of the tissue that is the clitoris. So penises actually are like clitorises that have been pulled out. So clitoris is most definitely real. And what was the other part of the question?
Where is it? I'm not joking.
Okay.
I think it's exactly where it is.
Sure. So it's in the same spot, effectively, as where a penis is. It's above the vagina and below the where the separation of the vulva lips, the outer lips and the inner lips. I'm starting to get very technical now, which is slightly more complex on radio because you can't see what I'm doing.
It's theatre of the mind. You've got to imagine a vagina.
Yes, well, we're imagining vulvas is what we're imagining.
Yes, sorry.
And so where the two outer labia separate at the top, so closest to the pubic bone where the hair might have been, that's the area. So approximately, let's say maybe a centimeter and a half below that is where the clitoris is going to be. Some clitorises are big, some clitorises are small, some are showers and growers.
And what does it feel like? The lights might be out, it might be dark.
Who owns the clitoris?
No, the person who's trying to find it.
So it depends if it's aroused or not. In the same way that penises become erect, clitorises get erection. So if the clitoris doesn't have an erection, it might be very, very difficult to find insofar as that it's sitting underneath layers of skin and it is pushed up back kind of, because the clitoris itself, the part of it that we can feel, is suspended from the pubic bone by a little ligament. And so when the clitoris is erect, when it's aroused, it literally juts out like a penis. Smaller, but it does the same thing. So when it's not aroused, it's hanging flat, just like a penis is doing the same thing. So in order to find it, it might be helpful to focus on getting arousal happening, because touching a clitoris when the rest of the vulva is not engorged and not aroused can actually feel not very nice. So going straight for the clitoris is actually not a great thing to do. One of the better things to do is to be stroking the labia gently, softly, having your lubricant there. Kissing is a really great way to get blood pumping, to get things moving. Kissing ears, kissing necks, kissing nipples, kissing bellies, kissing thighs. All these things are going to get blood moving, and that whole process is going to actually get your partner in the mood and wanting to have her clitoris touched more than you, you know, going straight for the clitoris in the first 30 seconds of getting together, because that can feel, it can actually feel quite invasive, almost like she's having a medical procedure, which, unless that's what you're doing, is not such a great feeling.
I'm joined by Cindy Darnell. She's a sex and relationships therapist and educator. Right now we're talking about the vagina. We're doing a crash course in pleasure. Ash asks on the text line, how do I know if I'm having an orgasm? I don't think I'm having one, but could it be that I just don't have a huge climax? I know this is a question for a lot of women.
Mm. Having an orgasm depends on a variety of factors, but usually it's a sensation that means you lose, I don't want to say lose consciousness because that's not quite what I mean, but you lose awareness of time and space for a short moment. And when I say a short moment, it might be 1 second, it might be 5 seconds. This is in a conventional setting. There are some people who practice kind of tantric sex and all these other fabulous, delicious things who talk about orgasms that go on for minutes and hours, and we're not going to talk
about
that.
Who's got the time? Who's got the time, Cindy?
So, yeah, so keeping it at the 101 level.
Yeah.
It's similar to when you're having such a good time that you sort of lose track of time, and you might also notice that there will be an extra sense of tingling and wetness in the rest of your vulva. There might be a flush of your cheeks. You might notice that your heart rate has increased. You might notice that your body is tensing up a lot. All of these things can be indications that you are having an orgasm. For a lot of women, the first orgasm they have might take them by surprise. For a lot of women, the first orgasm they have often happens with the help of a vibrator, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. In fact, I actually think using vibrators, external vibrators on your clitoris rather than things that go in and out of your vagina, because they're kinds of vibrators, but they're a different kind. The ones that I think are best for women who are just learning about having orgasms clitorally are external vibrators, often like the big sort of ones that you plug into the wall. They're really powerful. They're really, really great. And they're really helpful for beginners and women who have struggled with orgasm in the past, because they really offer lots and lots of good sensations. And they're big enough that they cover a really big area of the vulva rather than the little ones, which are also great, but tend to just focus on a very small area. So that would be my suggestion for the orgasm question.
You're listening to The Hookup with Hannah Riley on Triple J. I'm joined by Cindy Darnell. She's a sex and relationships therapist and educator. Next, we're going to be shifting our attention towards the penis. We're joined by an expert in pleasure. And if you've got a question about penises and how to get the most out of them, give us a call, 1-300-055-36, or you can text me on 0439-757-555. You're listening to The Hookup with Hannah Riley on Triple J. Bit of a language warning. We're going to be talking very graphically about sex for the next little while. So if that's not your thing, then maybe tune out for a little bit. But if it is, then you are absolutely in for a treat, because I'm joined by Cindy Darnell. She's a sex and relationships therapist and educator. We're basically doing a crash course in pleasure, how you can get better at doing it. And we've kind of covered a little bit of the vagina, although, you know, you could speak about it forever and ever. And we're going to be moving our attention towards the penis now. Cindy, penis 101. You've never approached a penis before. You've never seen one live in the wild. Where do you start?
So I think it's important to remember that all penises require handling that is as diverse as pussies require handling that is diverse. So that's the first thing to remember. I think a lot of us are conditioned to believe that penises, you know, they like it rough and tough and strong and all these other kind of, you know, bloke words that we associate with blokes. And some penises do like rough, tough, tumble stuff, absolutely, but a lot don't. And the penis is not necessarily going to be any tougher or less tough because it's attached to a bloke. So it's in terms of touching it, it depends whether it's hard or soft, actually. So hard penises, first of all, let me just dispel a few myths about hard penises. Hard penises are not a rule, they're an exception. insofar as a lot of men, I would say 100% of men of all ages, will have a unreliable relationship with their penis throughout their life, mm-hmm. in that it means there will be times where their erections are not present and they would like them to be there.
It's a fairly good friend.
That's just how it is. The amount of young men that I meet who are in an absolute panic about them penis not working, as it were, not having an erection, is flat. I would say the majority of young men that I work with, that is the main reason that they come to see me. And the thing is that all these guys, and I ask them, you know, have you talked to anybody about this? Talk to your girlfriend, talk to your mates. They all say no, which is astounding, because when women have period trouble or they have, you know, whatever they have, they will talk to their mates about it in detail. They talk about all the stuff, you know, and as they should. I think it's fabulous that women do that. I would like for dudes to take a leaf out of our book and talk about this stuff more. Anyway, so that's an aside. So first of all, erections not reliable. Second thing, let's say that the erection is present. The top third of the penis, so the head of the penis is the most sensitive, the lower two-thirds less sensitive. So if you're going to be gentle with it, you're going to be very, very gentle with the top third, you can be less gentle with the lower two-thirds. Now, what I mean by that is you don't squeeze the head. You don't use your teeth on the head. That is excruciatingly painful.
But I'm pretty sure I've read that in some women magazines, you know, sex tips.
What?
Oh, teeth. The guys love the teeth.
Look, there are certain blokes who would love it. I don't want to yuck anybody's yum here. No. But, you know, if we're starting at basics and if you're just looking up with someone and you don't know them very well, I would say keep the teeth right away from
you. Yeah, I'm being facetious. I think teeth is for pros who have had a long conversation about it beforehand.
Totally. Absolutely. It's certainly not beginner's level stuff. However, sometimes teeth get in the way, because unless your teeth are, you know, removable from the rest of your mouth.
We wish, right?
Some cases, that is how it is, but not everybody. So let's assume that your teeth are in there permanently. Yep. So it is then about getting more traction with your lips and making sure that you have enough saliva in your mouth for that kind of stuff. The lower two-thirds of the penis you can hold with your hand and squeeze it. And the lower two-thirds of the penis can actually take quite a lot of pressure. It's surprising how much pressure the lower two-thirds of the penis can take, in much the same way that a vagina and the actual the tube of the vagina can actually take quite a lot of pressure as well. So we didn't get to talk about vaginas at all when we were talking about vulvas. But so the lower two-thirds of the penis can take a lot of pressure with squeezing. However, again, I really strongly advise the use of lube. In fact, any kind of downstairs action, you absolutely need to use lube. There is this misconception that lube is only for old people, or if you're really turned on, you know, then you shouldn't need lube. That is utter bullshit. Let me say
language,
this again.
Sydney.
It's not okay. It's not okay. And I get really cross, because this is the information that young people should be learning in high school. They should be learning that lube is essential, in the same way as brushing your teeth is essential. But because they don't, they end up in all sorts of strife where they actually can tear tissue and tear and really hurt themselves. And this can all be changed if they were using lubricant.
And we've actually received a text from someone who that advice may be really important for. It reads, I have an uncircumcised penis, which means when I have sex, it can actually be painful for a while because the skin gets pulled back so far.
Yes,
is there any way to stop this from happening or make it less painful?
Yes, using a really good quality lubricant. So lubricants, I know we're not allowed to talk about brands, but my personal preference is towards silicon lubricants, which tend to be at the more expensive end of the market. However, there are some very good water-based lubricants around these days, which are glycerin-free and paraben-free, and what that means is they don't have the quality that makes them go a bit sticky. So some of the cheaper brands, after you've had a little bit of friction, they get a bit sticky and a bit claggy, and we don't want that. So we want to get a more expensive one that is nice and slick and slippery and stays slick and slippery with heat and friction. So using lube on a penis, going back to the penis, it can feel really, really nice because a dry hand on a dry penis, once the excitement of being touched sort of wears off, that can start feeling a little bit, like the skin can drag. So there's absolutely nothing wrong with having, you know, a nice bottle of lube next to your bed, or if you're just going out for the night, carrying it around in little sachets. You can buy sachets from adult stores. It's really, really helpful and a really great thing to do.
I'm joined by Cindy Darnell. She's a sex and relationships therapist and educator. And if you've got any questions for her, give us a call on 1300 055 36, or you can text us on 0439 757 555. We've got a text from Dominique, which reads, in all caps, the balls. Teach me how to master the mystery that is the testicles, please. Mm. I know that as a straight woman, I know that when I first started, you know, my sexual endeavors, I was like, what do I do with those? Like, do I ignore them?
Look, again, the main thing with all this stuff, everything that I'm telling you is helpful, but the truth is it's only helpful in context. Mm. If you are not communicating well with your partner, so for example, if you've only just met them or you're drunk and all these other things, which, you know, people hook up under those circumstances, I know that. But what it does is it means that it minimizes communication, so then it's really hard to, no pun intended, to have conversations about what feels good and what doesn't feel good. And, you know, this comes with confidence, this comes with time, just learning to ask for what you want. So I do really want to encourage people to be more upfront about discussing this stuff. And, you know, it's perfectly okay. In fact, it's actually really helpful. It's the difference between crappy sex and great sex. So balls, again, if the penis is soft, the balls are going to be hanging down lower. If the penis is hard, they're going to be up higher. And as he comes closer to coming, they're going to get higher and higher still. So some dudes love having their balls played with. They love having their balls sucked. They like having their skin of the scrotum. So the scrotum is the skin bag that the balls are in, and they're literally, for folks who've never seen balls, if you imagine imagine some chicken skin with a couple of golf balls inside.
Oh, I'm getting so turned on, Cindy.
Look, I mean, they're fabulous. You know, all of our genitals are gorgeous, but I'm just trying to think of something that's a bit more visceral.
Yes.
For folks who want to learn that way. That's sort of what they are like, that you can literally feel these two individual little nuggets in there. Yeah, so that's where the sperm's made. And all of this stuff is in the Atlas of Erotic Anatomy and Arousal, with visual images, so you get a sense of what's all going on in there. So some dudes like to have the skin pulled on. Mm-hmm. With lubricant, again, coming back to the lube is so your, you know, wingman when it comes to this stuff. Some like to have the balls, like the skin kind of pulled down and the balls kind of exposed, so... I'm trying to describe this without you being able to see it. There's, if you put your fingers around the ball sack, like you were sort of sealing a bag,
mm-hmm.
and making the skin really nice and tight, and so the balls are kind of pushed up and they're a bit shiny. They're like Christmas decorations at this point, you know what I mean? And then again, you can use your tongue on them, you can use your hand, like the palm of your hand, and just moving it around in a circular motion, again, very gently. So the skin can take a little bit of rough treatment in some people, always check, but the actual balls themselves, don't squeeze them because you could cause irreversible damage.
Right, well, that's very important. Cindy, what are your thoughts, as a specialist in pleasure, what's your feeling on condoms and the argument that they decrease pleasure for men during sex?
Mm. Look, there's no doubt that they do alter sensation.
Mm.
However, there are some really great ones on the market these days that are made out of stuff other than latex, which feel like there's nothing there at all. And again, actually, I think you can even get them at supermarkets and pharmacies and stuff, not only just from adult stores, but of course, adult stores have a much broader range.
I mean, I guess some of the questions that young guys have asked us on the show before is a potential solution for maybe like practicing with condoms before, or like, I guess, getting used to them.
Yeah, absolutely. So if, and a lot of fellas find this, that they, you know, it's even the sound of the wrapper opening and they just, you know, they lose their erection at that point. Yeah, and that's totally normal. Totally normal. And what happens is you just kind of start again and you build it up, blah, blah, blah. But if it becomes such an issue that you really, really want to have intercourse and you can't because as soon as the condom, you know, you just get the whiff of it or the sound of the crackling packet makes you lose your erection, it is totally a helpful thing to do is to practice masturbating with a condom on.
Tyler,
and use lube.
How many times have I said that?
I feel like you're a fan of lube, Cindy. Tyler, thanks so much for calling the hookup. You want to know, what if all this is working too well?
Yeah.
Could you tell us what your issue might be?
Yeah, just with premature ejaculation. I was wondering if there was any ways to kind of work around it without like using medication.
Yes, there are. You can do stuff other than intercourse. So what is really helpful is to recognize that intercourse is only one thing out of a gazillion things that you can do.
Intercourse by which you mean...
penis in vagina intercourse.
Oh, yeah, or penis in wherever kind of thing.
Yes, yes, yes. Penis in anus, penis in mouth even. We can... Yeah, do things that are going to give you less attention onto the head of your penis. So shifting the attention down to the lower two-thirds of the penis can be a helpful way to practice activating sensations other than that higher tip of the penis, which is the bit that tends to be most sensitive in a situation like that. Another thing that you can also do is to bring your attention to your penis through changing your breathing pattern. So as you are approaching orgasm or as you feel like you're getting close, what can be helpful to do is instead of letting it kind of just go and it's all there, literally stop whatever it is that you're doing that's getting you close. This is a process called edging that you might have seen on the interwebs and in porn. They talk about it a bit as well. And it's actually a really helpful thing, which is a practice where you start getting close to the point of orgasm and then you stop and you shift your breathing to something that's a bit more like a meditation kind of breath. So instead of it being a shorter, faster breath that might be going in and out of your mouth, you can switch it to a slower breath going in and out of your nose. And you've got to really think about that. But the more that you practice that, so at this point we're starting to combine sex with meditation and it starts getting very sexy at this point because it's actually about slowing things down and not rushing to the finish line. So that's what you can do that doesn't necessarily involve medication. The other thing, of course, is to use condoms that can help, even if you are in a partnership where that's not necessarily a requirement, because it can help with the desensitizing. But I'm generally not a fan of the numbing sprays and numbing gels because you don't really get control over where those things go.
Yeah.
And they can end up sort of smearing onto other bits of your body, smearing onto your partner's body, and then all of a sudden nobody can feel anything. And then I'm kind of like, what's the point of having sex if you can't feel it? Or you can actually really cause damage because you lose sensation.
Right. You're listening to The Hookup with Hannah Riley on Triple J. Don't go anywhere, though. I'm joined by Cindy Darnell. She's a sex and relationships therapist and educator. And we've been talking very graphically and will continue to do so. We're going to be talking about the anus, all about bud stuff just around the corner. Maybe you've wanted to try it, but you think it will be painful or uncomfortable. Cindy is going to be answering any questions that you have on this, so give us a call on 1300 055 36, or you can text us on 0439 757 555. You're on The Hookup with Hannah Riley on Triple J. Thanks for joining us. Bit of a warning, we are talking very graphically about sex at the moment, so if it's not your thing, maybe just, you know, tune out for a little bit. I'm joined by Cindy Darnell. She's a sex and relationships therapist and educator. And we're doing a bit of a crash course in pleasure. We've covered a little bit of the vagina, touched on the penis for a little while, and now we've moved to the anus to talk about butt stuff. Now, Cindy, how often are your clients coming to you talking about this kind of stuff? Does a taboo kind of still exist?
Well, kind of, but not really. By the time they've made an appointment to come and see me, they have made a decision that they need to come and talk about sex. Right. So by the time they get there, generally they just kind of want to know if they're allowed, how frank they're allowed to be. And of course, because obviously I'm very frank, that gives them permission to be frank as well, because I don't see any point in, you know, sitting around and, you know, using euphemisms and pretending when we're actually just trying to get to the heart of the matter, as it were. So, look, I mean, I think that the taboo has certainly lifted. It's a thing that, in terms of the, you know, my Atlas of Erotic Anatomy and Arousal, which folks buy through my website, they can buy it as a whole package or they can buy individual modules. And the anal sex module, which is called But That's Not All, An Introduction to Anal Pleasure, is by far the highest selling module by more than 200%.
Wow. All right. So, that's a solid plug.
Yeah, there's a lot of ass bandits out there who are really interested in it. And that's great. And the reason that I created it was because people can cause themselves ridiculous amounts of damage if they're doing anal sex badly.
Well, let's get on to that. Let's talk about if you're trying to, you know, let's say have anal sex for the first time, what should you know before you go into this?
Well, first, I think it's really helpful to understand the anatomy of the anus. And so, you know, when people are, you know, if a fairly sort of stereotypical context, if a guy says to a girl, "Are you into anal?" the most helpful thing she can say in response to him is, "Do you know how to do it?" Because the truth is that a lot of people don't know how to do it. And it's not as straightforward as just sticking it in. There's actually a lot more to it, particularly in terms of health stuff and in terms of pleasure stuff for the person who's receiving. And also, let's understand that, you know, my friend Tristan Taramino says the anus is a great equalizer. Everybody has one. So this is not just something about who, you know, guys sticking it into girls. There's a lot of men who like receiving. There's a lot of your listeners who are, you know, gay, bisexual, lesbian as well. So this has got nothing to do with orientation. This has got nothing to do with gender. All kinds of people enjoy butt stuff, and that's fabulous. But mostly, well, they consistently enjoy it when it's good. I don't think I've met anybody who's into bad anal. So what's helpful to know is the anatomy, truthfully. That is actually it, because it's not like sticking something into a vagina, which is more elastic. It's not like sticking something into a mouth. Anuses are capable of extraordinarily expanding, as we know, because of the... Am I allowed to say this? The size of our poos can be kind of, you know, large. But if we're going to just cut to the chase,
I feel like that's not the most graphic thing that we've said on the show, but it's up there.
Anyway, so they're capable of, you know, moderate amounts of expansion. But in order for this to happen, we have to have all the right reflexes happening. We have to get the right blood flow happening. We have to get the right kind of mood happening. We have to get the right kind of stimulation and arousal. And this is why, if we practice our anal moves from just based on porn, what's happening is we're missing out on all the preparation that goes on
beforehand.
Yeah,
there's a lot of different steps before, you know.
Absolutely. And so the thing with anal scenes in porn is they are made for the eyes. They are not made to feel good. And so if you are doing what you've seen in porn, where it looks like it slides in dry and comes out wet, and it's just, you know, bang, 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 and it all happens in the space of a, you know, a 5-minute clip, that's not real. And I know that most of your listeners recognize that porn sex is not meant to be replicating real life sex. It's meant to be a fantasy, in the same way that watching Game of Thrones is not, you know, replicating real life. We understand.
And we're talking about a specific kind of porn here, a quite mainstream version of porn. Because there are, you know, there are different subsets that do try and really accurately.
Absolutely. Yeah, but the 5-minute stuff that you get on the tube sites is generally not that kind of stuff. And my hunch is that a lot of your listeners would be watching the 5-minute tube stuff. So if, and this is where, this is the thing where people come and say, oh, you know, all these terrible things are happening because people are watching porn. No, all these terrible things are happening because people don't have proper sex education. If they had proper sex education, they would be able to watch these 5-minute clips and go, oh yeah, that's hilarious. That's like watching, you know,
a circus trick or something.
That's not
like
real,
that.
You know.
We've got a question for you on 0439 757 555. Hmm. Are anal orgasms the same as vaginal?
Well, no, because they're anal orgasms. I'm not quite sure that I understand what
I guess the question
is.
Means if you find is yourself having an orgasm during anal sex, where does that come from?
Oh, well, there's a lot of nerve endings in the pelvis that are distributed through the anus, through the rectum, through the vagina, through the cervix, through the clitoris, through the labia. There's a gazillion nerves down in that area. There's a lot of blood vessels. There's a lot of things going on down there. So, because one of the other modules in the Atlas is about orgasms, and it describes how different orgasms happen. And a lot of people, particularly cis men who have penises and were born as male, identify as male at birth, have something called a prostate gland inside their anus, which is the equivalent of a G-spot, which is in a vagina. And for a lot of guys, straight guys, bisexual guys, gay guys, whatever, just those kinds of guys, having anal penetration that stimulates their prostate can give them an orgasm. And a lot of dudes love it. Absolutely love it. And that's not necessarily with a penis or a toy, although it can be. It can just be a finger can be enough. And learning how to massage that prostate in exactly that sweet spot can send guys over the edge. And for women as well, they can enjoy anal. They don't have the prostate in the same spot. It can be accessed through the vagina more easily. But it is a really beautiful, intimate thing to be able to share with somebody, provided that you've done all the preparation that needs to happen in terms of, you know, cleanliness, short fingernails, making sure that you're not using the same finger in an anus that you're using in a vagina. This is extremely important because you can literally spread infections around that can require a course of antibiotics. It can be that full on.
So. I'd just like to know, even if you do follow all of these rules, if you do everything to the T, is anal sex going to be enjoyable for everyone?
If it's done well, yes. In the initial stages, it can feel unusual because it's a sensation that we mostly associate with going to the toilet, and we mostly associate it with evacuation. But we don't usually associate it with things coming in. So it's an acquired taste, like broccoli.
Yeah, okay. So it is an acquired taste. It's not, I guess, like anything sexual. You can't really say everyone's going to enjoy it across the board.
No, definitely not. But everyone has the potential to enjoy it.
Yeah.
But there's so much that's going on with sex that's just beyond the physical. I mean, the physical component of sex is just one component of it.
Mm.
For a lot of people, there's the emotional component, there's the social component, there's the mental component, there's the safety component, there's, for some people, there's the spiritual component. All of this stuff comes into it. And whether it's, you know, a 10-year relationship or a one-night stand, all that stuff is still bubbling around in the background, even if we pretend that it's not, we're tricking ourselves. And I think that because we are so uncomfortable, Australian culture, broadly speaking, is not so great at talking about sex. We've got all this stuff bubbling away in the background and we don't talk about it, and we feel very uncomfortable having these conversations, which is why shows like this are so great, because all of us, no, really, I think it's so important, because we have to talk about this stuff, and nobody's weird or broken or damaged if you don't know things or you feel a bit uncomfortable talking about anal or talking about blowjobs or talking about orgasms. You know, there was this period in my life where I didn't know this stuff either.
I'm curious about that, actually. How did you become a sex therapist? How does one get into this line of work?
Well, I guess I'd always had an interest in sex from a young, well, when I say a young age, I mean as a teenager, and then in my 20s I was very interested in it. And I didn't get a particularly good sex education at school, like a lot of people. And I was lucky enough at a very young age to encounter a teacher called Barbara Carellas, who really put me on the path that I'm on now. And I met her many, 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 many years ago, and she and I are very good friends still to this day. So I was very lucky to have found a mentor and a teacher who helped me do it. And I think for young people who are listening, if they're interested in developing sex, an interest in sex, whether it's with a professional intent or just purely for their own knowledge, there is absolutely nothing wrong with seeking out teachers, with going to workshops, reading books, watching videos, attending online classes, you know, hanging out, going to different meetup groups where sex things happen, either actual or talking. The only way to get good at sex and get comfortable with it is to go and learn about it. It's not going to just magically happen. No, you have to go out of your way to make it happen. In the same way that if you want to learn how to be a good cook, you can't just sit around in your bedroom imagining making food. You've actually got to get out and do it. And sex is the same.
Well, on that, Cindy, unfortunately we have run out of time, but thank you so much for joining us on The Hookup. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for inviting me.